Talking today with Dr. Amy Hagerman, of course, from Oklahoma State University's Ag Economics Department. Dr. Hagerman, let's talk a little bit about where we are in pulling together all the information that we're going to need to go to our FSA office on a virtual basis and sign up for the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program. Of course, that starts right after Memorial Day.
Absolutely. Producers need to be really proactive in getting an appointment with their FSA office by either phone or email, as you said, virtually. And think about the paperwork they need to have going in, especially if they've never applied for FSA programs before. I think many of our crop producers are familiar with those programs, and many of our livestock producers, especially in the western side of the state, may have had experience with the livestock forage program and be familiar with the paperwork required for FSA. But our specialty crop producers may have had less experience with FSA, depending in what area they're in. Inventory is going to be a really important part of that, particularly this concept of unpriced inventory as of January 15th. And I think we'll be looking for FSA to provide some more details on that, on what kinds of documentation they're accepting, on what they consider to be priced or unpriced for grain in storage, or for livestock that might have contracts. So that kind of information we're going to need a little bit more clarification on going into this next month to 2 months for sign up for this program.
I know that I guess one of the things that maybe caught some of our producers a little off guard, the realization that winter wheat not included as far as any sort of assistance under this program.
Yeah, the calculations on what is a qualified loss to create an eligible commodity are very specific. They're linked to futures market prices in the period of January, that week of January 16th, and then the week of April 6th and 7th. So that's basically that first week that the loss period starts and the last week before that loss period ends, because the loss period is from January 15th to April 15th. Now, winter wheat in particular had a little bit of recovery in that early April period. So what that means is that the difference between those 2 weeks, that week in January and that week in April, was only about 2.5%, and it had to meet a 5% threshold in order to be considered an eligible commodity. Now, having said that, USDA has left the door open for other industries to make an argument that they have experienced a loss in this period. So it is possible there could be some other aid for wheat producers later in the year. It is also possible that they'll mostly point wheat producers towards their safety net program, like ARC and PLC for the 2019 crop year. So we'll just have to see how this works out for our winter wheat producers. But that's the reason they weren't on that initial list, was those dates that were chosen, and that loss in the futures market between those 2 weeks didn't hit that 5% threshold.
I know that when we start looking at actual payments, it gets complicated because the secretary actually put together two pots of money to come up with this overall $16 billion total amount of money that will be available for this particular sign up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the important things for producers to realize is that at the end of the day, they're going to get a single payment. It's important to understand that the payment comes from those two pots of money, and how it's broken out between the pots of money definitely factors into the payment rate tables that people will see. So understanding that, for example, for our cattle producers in the state, their sales from January 15th to April 15th will be under the CARES Act money. That was direct funds set aside for producers who didn't get Title I safety net programs. And cattle producers definitely fall in that category. That's overseen by a separate group in Washington, D.C. But then April 16th to May 14th, that $33 that's going to get paid on their highest inventory in that period, that includes their breeding stock, calves they have on the ground, that comes out of the CCC money. It was a different pot of money. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a single payment that includes both of those pieces.
In the case of cattle, They were pointed to quite a bit. What, a little over $5 billion of the overall $16 billion will go to beef cattle. What will a typical cow-calf operator probably end up getting?
Well, I think that's a really good question, and it's going to depend a lot on how they treated their calf crop from last year. So if you, for example, thought about a cow-calf producer who had cows and unweaned calves that were born in March and April, but then they had held over their calves from last year and were grazing them out. If they sold those calves before that April 15th deadline, then they would receive that $139 a head on sales. But if they continue to graze those cattle even until April 17th, April 20th, then they're only going to receive the $33 a head for inventory in that period. So timing is going to be very critical of when cattle were sold for how much payment a cow-calf producer could receive.
And they will obviously be subject to this overall payment limit, which the secretary did raise from the initial signal that he had given, correct?
Somewhat. So a producer is eligible to receive individually up to $250,000 across all commodities. So if we have someone who, for example, maybe has corn and soybeans in addition to a cow-calf operation, their total payments across their corn, soybeans, and cattle cannot exceed $250,000. However, there is an interesting addition in there. So for our operations that are formed as corporations or LLCs, they have a slightly higher limit. Each of the entities, provided they can show they're actively engaged in that operation, is eligible for $250,000 each, up to three, meaning that you have kind of a higher threshold for the corporation or the entity as a whole versus the individual. So this is something that was floated in the 2018 Farm Bill and the House version. It didn't make it into the final Farm Bill. And so it's really interesting to see this language now in this CFAP program.
So in this case, if you got, say, an LLC, man, wife, son, potentially that would be three entities, correct?
Correct. Provided that they each meet the threshold for having spent 400 or more hours in active personal labor or management. Each of them has to meet that threshold in order to be considered an eligible shareholder in the LLC or corporation.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about some of the crops. And, you know, we've got wheat not directly impacted by this program, but some of our other crops, cotton, for example. You know, walk us through an example with a cotton producer.
Sure. So for cotton producers, it's going to, again, be based on that unpriced inventory. So if you had an opportunity to look at that table of values, you'd see that the amount of money under the CARES Act is 9 cents per pound, and the amount of money under CCC is 10 cents per pound. Basically, they took that difference in futures price for example, grain sorghum, where we don't have a futures price. They used a cash price. They took that difference, and they divvied it up between those two pots of money for the crop producers. So 50% of your unpriced inventory is going to get multiplied by that CARES Act payment of 9 cents, and then the rest will be multiplied by that CCC payment of 10 cents. It's also important to note that for our crop producers, what their eligible inventory is whatever unpriced inventory they have as of January 15th or 50% of their 2019 production. It's the smaller of those two things. So if they had already marketed 60-70% of their crop and they had a locked price on that, then they would only be eligible for that remaining 30-40% that was unpriced.
Right. So in this case, you don't add the 9 and the 10 cents together. You average them. So a typical producer of cotton, for example, the unsold inventory would be eligible for a 9.5 cent payment. Is that true?
True. Yeah. The final check that is cut will be based on both of those numbers together, mm-hmm. with half of your inventory on one and half your inventory on the other, exactly.
And I guess what the other little wrinkle here is that USDA kind of wanted to make sure they didn't run out of money too quick. They're not going to pay the entire payment right up front.
Exactly. The first payment is only going to be 80% of your eligible PFAT payment that's calculated by FSA. So then the other 20% will only be paid out if there's still enough money in this pot in order to make the second payment later on in the year. But that first payment should roll out pretty quickly after an application has been approved.
End of the day, this is a little more complicated program. You're going to have a lot more people potentially wanting to sign up for this program. I guess put a good bit of pressure on our FSA offices at the local level.
Yeah, absolutely. I think both the conditions in which we're working right now, trying to maintain the appropriate social distancing, as well as the complexity of this program and explaining it, it makes it more important than ever to really get your information and your documentation in line as well as you can prior to talking to your appointment with FSA. I would encourage you, go ahead and make your appointment with FSA. It's already going to be a little while before they can get to you in the queue. So go ahead and get in the queue, make your appointment with FSA, visit that farmers.gov/CFAP site. It lists all of the forms you're going to have to fill out and the documentation required for it, and attend some of these OSU Extension and FSA webinars that are coming up to get more details about what needs to be provided. There's also some flexibility in here. You have within 60 days to get all your documentation in. And if you have to find an additional couple of documents as you go along, you can do that.
And you mentioned the webinars. You've got a couple right off the bat, right after Memorial Day on Tuesday, right?
Absolutely. Tuesday at 2 p.m. and 6 p.m., we'll be partnering up with the state FSA office. They'll be providing the technical details, what kinds of documents do you need. We'll be providing more of this higher-level overview of what all's in it and how it's going to affect Oklahoma producers in the state.
Thank you, Amy. Dr. Amy Hagerman, Farm Policy Specialist at Oklahoma State University in the Ag Economics Department at OSU, talking with us about the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program. A lot of moving parts there that you're going to need to be paying attention to. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.